Welcome, everyone, to DEI After 5, the show that focuses on topics across diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the brightest minds in the industry. Here's your hostess, inclusive culture curator and coach, Sasha Thompson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of DEI After 5. Now, this episode is going to be a little bit different than what we've done in the past because we're doing a deep dive, but also hearing a personal story. And I think it really ties into, you know, when we're thinking about allyship, and if you've listened to me for any length of time, you know what I feel about kind of that phrase, that term. But what does it mean to really show up as someone that is going to be an ally, right? Or someone that wants to be a part of, an accomplice, right? In doing this work. What does it mean to be someone that is creating or trying to create an environment that is more inclusive and equitable? So today, my guest is Yarik Kamenchka, who is an advocate in the LGBTQ plus community, but again, has a very unique story. And so, Yarik, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Sasha. It's my pleasure to be here.
So, Yarik, for those who do not know who you are, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this work?
My name is Yarik Kubichka, as you introduced me. So I'm Ukrainian. I was born and raised in Ukraine. Now I'm living for over 10 years in Geneva, Switzerland. I live with my husband and my son, who just turned 5 years in December. Oh. And throughout my life, I have been exposed to different types of environment. I did experience some quite hostile environments, but I also had the privilege to be in environments where I could thrive as a gay man and as a gay father. And also professionally, I have done quite some work in promoting diversity and inclusion with some awareness campaigns. And at the moment, what I'm doing is that I'm just dedicating all of my time to driving diversity and inclusion. Just really kind of trying to share some of the privilege that I managed to get and was lucky to get, and probably some of it that I fought for quite a lot, just to share it with other people.
Wonderful. And so, Yarik, I want you to, you know, when we first spoke, you told me your story, right? Like, you know, you had background in the military, and part of the challenge or some of the challenges that came along with being gay in the military. And so could you share a little bit of that and how that has led you to do the work that you're doing now?
I think the theme of military really came as the war in my home country, Ukraine, started. And I was thinking, what can I do to support my home country while being here in Switzerland? And then I did have a friend who was actually, for quite a while, he's actually the first open LGBTQ plus soldier in the Ukrainian army. And then through this connection, I learned through the enormous struggles the LGBTQ plus community is facing, especially being in military in Ukraine. Because in fact, they are having two enemies. There is one enemy in front of them, like for every soldier, that they have to face. But then unfortunately, for the LGBTQ plus, there is also another enemy. There could be a homophobic body, a combat body, who is not going to support them, or who can, on the contrary, probably refuse to support, or even show some hostile behavior. Mm-hmm. And on top of it, the context is very different than a corporate environment. It is sad, but it is a reality. This is, let's say, an environment where people don't stay for a long time quite often. So it is kind of very high rotation of people there. So this creates additional challenges, how to create any kind of culture where literally no one knows who is going to be alive tomorrow. And then also for the commanders, for the officers, it also creates kind of quite often it creates a behavior that it's easier to send away the LGBTQ plus soldier to another unit than to try to establish any kind of peaceful, acceptable, and comfortable environment just for one person when there are hundreds of people and there is a lot going on.
Yeah. And there's so much... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. And just so what then I did that I established a nonprofit here in Geneva, and then we did some fundraising events to support the community back there. And I think the biggest impact was not just that we managed to collect quite some funds that they were able to use for advocacy, for psychological support, etc., but also the LGBTQ plus, so they really appreciated that there is someone caring for them, that their voice is being heard also in Europe, like here in Switzerland. There are actually people who care, who vote for them with their voices, coming to fundraising events, and also donating money to them. So that was really something that they really appreciated.
Yeah. You know, there's so much that you said just now that I think we need to really think about, right? So these are individuals, though they may be from the LGBTQ plus community, that have volunteered to put their lives on the line for their country. And at the same time, may be dealing with those that are not supportive of them within that same unit, right? So it's almost dealing with two wars or two battles simultaneously. And, you know, when I think about that and I think about what I'm seeing in the corporate space, it can be very similar, you know, where there are organizations that are in states that may not be supportive, that may be turning back some of their laws or creating legislation that is against the LGBTQ plus community or other marginalized groups. And it's, you know, wanting to move forward, wanting to push forward and not necessarily know who your enemy is, because it could be someone that is right next to you. And so there's a challenge to that. And I appreciate what you were saying about the commanders, because they're the leaders. They're the ones that are in charge. And it's unfortunate that for so many, they can just, you know, they want to just, let's move them somewhere else. Let's move them to another unit, make them someone else's problem. And we see the same thing happening in corporate spaces, right? When there's someone that is othered in a group where you can't say it's their work ethic or their, you know, what they're producing, right? That's not what's wrong. It's who they are as an individual that they don't necessarily care for or like, be it race, gender, sexual orientation, whatever it is. And they come up with all of these reasons to move them out, right? They're not a cultural fit, right? They don't, you know, they're not a part of who we are. So when you created this organization, tell me about some of the pushback, right? Some of the opposition to having a space where people felt that they could be safe.
There was quite a lot. I also kind of learned that just putting out this message, like to support LGBTQ plus military in Ukraine on social media, like the kind of comments I have received, I didn't expect to receive. It was exactly as you said, because LGBTQ plus soldiers, they put their life online. And because of this, actually, well, let's say some positive development is that their voice somehow became a bit more heard and a bit more respected by civic society. So they got a bit of power. And I think this is also one of the driving forces why I wanted to support them, just to make this voice even louder. But then the kind of comments I received on social media, like people were saying, yeah, I'm a soldier, I'm homophobic, I'm open about it. We just don't need those people in the army. I think another thing was kind of lack of awareness. People were really asking me, but are there any LGBTQ plus people in the army? Like, do they even exist? And then another theme on kind of pushback was something that I think we hear quite quite often, which is, but why do we need to separate LGBTQ plus soldiers from all soldiers? We just need to help everyone. Like people not really understanding that there is this unique situation where people literally having two enemies, and that is that they need some specific support for their specific, a very unique experience. So those were the types of pushbacks that I have received, just kind of driving across this message and just kind of getting people together to support this group. I would say also that coming back to the point of commanders, unfortunately, I do know more of, let's say, negative examples, but some of the few positive examples that I have, I found them to be quite interesting because, in a way, commanders were using, like, what is the language of the army? It's kind of brute force and, like, power. Mm-hmm. And then those commanders used to drive some change. So one commander literally lined up all of his people, and then he put the LGBT person, newcomer, next to them, and then the commander literally said, if anyone kind of touches, bullies this person, you will deal with me personally. And that is how very quickly there was some, let's say, culture shift implemented, which I found quite interesting. So it was not about doing trainings and I don't know, trying to shift people's perception very quickly, but just let's say leveraging what is seen as power, what is kind of all of this culture is about. It is about power, it is about force, and just using it, but as a force of good, which I think was an interesting positive example.
Yeah, like that's what I define allyship, right? Like being able to put yourself in a place of risk or harm on behalf of someone else, right? So to say to other soldiers, right, if anything happens to this person, right, you'll have to deal with me. Like that's literally putting your body in harm's way. And so I think that, you know, as we think about allyship and we think about people that are doing this work, It's quite like the visual that I get is like how many people are willing to do that, right? How many people are willing to not just say, oh, I support, but willing to take that extra step to say, if anything happens to this community or this individual, right, I am willing to step in to lend my privilege, right, to be able to lend my voice, to be able to take the brunt of whatever that is that you want to put out there. So I love that that example. You know, so go ahead.
If I may build, Sasha, then as I was sharing this example, then interestingly, I heard from a friend a very similar example from a corporate world. So a woman was recently promoted in a big company as a CFO. It was the first C-suite woman in the company. And then she did face quite a lot of, let's say, lack of trust from the team, et cetera. And the CEO of the company really did the thing quite similar to what this commander did. He literally sent the message that, yes, I understand it's not comfortable for you. You said it's the first time we are having a woman as CFO in our company, but you know what, you have to support her. I'm kind of watching all of it, and I'm kind of behind her. And that was also an interesting case. Exactly, they probably kind of putting personal privilege and personal power and almost kind of personal whatever reputation online for someone else for a good cause.
Yeah. For a good cause. And so many more people can do that.
Yes, I was literally thinking, I can count on one hand, unfortunately, but yeah, they're very inspiring those examples. I think kind of quite often allyship is understood as something very basic, like, I don't know, I don't beat up LGBTQ plus or people of color at night on the streets. If I don't do it, I'm kind of an ally. whereas basically just not a criminal if you don't do this. It has nothing to do with the election.
Yeah, it's like we need to redefine what allyship is and looks like, because mm-hmm. I think, you know, so many people think that it's this badge of honor that they can put on themselves, but it's no, what are the things that you are doing so that the individuals that you are saying that you are being an ally to can actually say, yes, this person is an ally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a whole other conversation. So yes. I want to do a little bit of a turn to the work that you're doing, because you have this new program, like you're using AI to help inform people around queer issues. So can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. So I think it kind of originally was created as coming from some of the issues I have faced myself. Like, mm-hmm. for example, as I was working back in Ukraine, which was not the most LGBTQ plus friendly environment, like I was literally scared to ask some questions in the office. Like I never dared to ask my HR if the company policy of covering medical insurance for partners is going to apply to me and mm-hmm. to my boyfriend. And so this is probably the starting point, create this AI, which is anonymous, reliable and credible source of information. So people like me who are scared to ask the HR, they can go to my chatbot and then ask about company policies, what is a parental leave for same sex. And also, then importantly, they can receive some coaching, for example, how do you go about coming out in the office, how I can get supported on this. But then importantly, what I learned is that this tool is probably even more important in growing allyship. And here, I think it helps to resolve two challenges that we have with creating allyship. And the first challenge is identity tags, where quite often in companies, let's say five open LGBTQ plus people are expected to educate like 5,000 people. And this is not realistic. And to be honest, it creates additional work for people. And this work, yes, it is something that I am privileged and honored to do, but this is also not a promotable work. So that's not something that is going to drive my career, if I'm brutally honest. But then on top of it, there is also, let's say, an emotional challenge, because in a way, I myself as a representative of underrepresented, oppressed community, I am asked to educate the oppressor, in a way, if I just put it very, very mm-hmm. talk. And over time, I kind of developed quite well emotional intelligence, so I can deal with some backlash, with some conscious, subconscious biases, with some hostile behavior, but it takes quite a lot of emotional intelligence to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And if I'm honest, quite often, well, I just want to step back. How come you don't know this? Like, you can just call it, or kind of educate yourself. But then what is good about AI? AI can have this unlimited emotional intelligence, probably because the machine never had all of those traumas and all those experience I had. And actually, I see AI as a query AI they have created is most often now used, and a big value of it is really to create this allyship. So first of all, because it's anonymous, and people who are not yet allies, they can go there and they can voice their concerns. Like they can say, oh, I am not an LGBTQ plus, but why everything should be about LGBTQ plus? I feel excluded, everything is in rainbow flags, etc.
Right.
And I would not react nicely to this, but the AI reacts really nicely. It validates you. I understand you're scared, I understand you're frustrated, but you should know it's not done to hurt you. It is really done to support the LGBTQ plus community, because there are such and such issues that they are facing. And then AI can very calmly go into, can you tell me the specific parts of those activities that probably make you feel excluded, et cetera, et cetera. So in a way, kind of starting this conversation with a person who is really far from a lie, kind of validating their emotions and also kind of getting some insight into what are their barriers and how do they feel, and probably trying to start this discussion how to make them into allies. And that is what I found impressive way how technology could almost have like those superhuman qualities to have the discussions, which sometimes are too hard for me to have.
Yeah, I love the use of AI for this. My tech background is coming up in my head like, yes, I love this because it does take that tax, right? That emotional tax off of the human that is constantly having to answer these questions. It removes that and creates a resource that can unlimited answer this question. But also because on the back end, it's seeing, okay, what is the most common questions, right? How can we continue to shape and formulate answers that are going to land in a way that people are going to, oh, okay, I get it, I understand. And so I just love the beauty of using technology in this way. And so is this something that is available to anyone? Is it just specifically within organizations? How are you all using it?
So the tool is available. It is on the webpage query.info, and it is anonymous. It is open to use for everyone. But then what I do, I create partnerships with organizations to create customized tools for them. And in this way, an organization can, first of all, put their D&I information into my tool, for example, specifics on their parental leave policies, D&I policies, etc. What are some of the employee resource group, what to do and whom to contact in case of some hostile behavior. And then on top, their organization also then receive access to the data, which is all of the data that we have, but also they can have their own organization-specific data just to sense the progress. And exactly as you said, to get insight, almost kind of an ongoing listening to what are the needs of LGBTQ plus community, but also importantly, what are the needs of allies, or probably not yet allies to be. And what are some of the barriers to solve for allies, and what are some of the things and policy change that is needed for the LGBTQ plus community themselves.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, so Yarik, this is not easy work, right? We've talked about kind of the toll that it has on individuals, you know, the things that you've talked about and that you've experienced. You know, how do you take care of yourself? Like, what are the things that you do to kind of fill your cup and give you excitement? I heard you have a little one, so that's probably keeping you very busy.
It does. Sasha, I have a very kind of simple answer, but it took me a long while to get to this kind of self-care technique, which is basically when I'm really exhausted, I just let myself do nothing, really like pure rest, and really not doing anything that is seen as effective, productive, like nothing, just kind of watching Netflix and eating instant ramen, not even putting my dishes into the dishwasher. And I know it sounds very simple, but it was a huge work for me to just let myself do nothing that is seen as productive. Like, no, like not even listen to some audiobooks while I'm doing something like that. No, just, Yarik, now you just do nothing. Nothing
productive. I can appreciate that.
It's something that really kind of fills my cup. Actually, it's kind of, I need to get a little bit bored to get kind of into my hyperactivity mode again. And it's really kind of through this really deep, useless, lazy rest that I get to this kind of a bit bored state that I almost cannot stop myself to start doing something again.
Yeah, I love that. I have my moments where I'll just curl up on the couch and just, the TV's watching me. Like, I'm not even watching.
Exactly. I thought you see what you
mean. The TV, like, I don't even know what's on, but it's on. And I'm just there. Yes. So I can appreciate that. So Yarik, thank you so much for joining us today. You know, I'm hoping that people were able to think about this in a different way. Think about how they can even use technology like yours to start answering questions or provide some resources for people within their organizations or within teams that they support, because this is tough. This is absolutely tough, and rules and regulations are changing constantly. So thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you, Sasha. It was an honor for me to be with you on this podcast. And yes, let's keep our work together to get more allies, and yes, also to make allies into accomplices, and just to create probably a more and more inclusive and more psychologically safe environment for all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And thank you all for tuning in to this week's episode. I hope you were able to walk away with a nugget or two that you didn't have when you came in or when you started listening or watching. You can catch us here every Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. Eastern on YouTube or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Be sure to like, share, subscribe. Tell all your friends and colleagues about this, because we want to be able to continue to spread this education to everyone. So until next time, have a good one.